Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the hottest show on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host. My name is Vernon Muhammad. Welcome to the No Romance Without Finance show. I'm glad you all can join us on a Sunday evening. I don't know about where you are, but it is freezing cold in Maryland. So I'm glad to be indoors. I'm so excited that we are 1 week away from the crowning event of Black History Month, Savior's Day. The most wonderful time of the year, folks. We're going to get into some celebration later on in this particular episode. We're also going to highlight some of the great achievements that Black people have made in the field of in various businesses, many different fields. We're going to talk a little bit about Mr. George Frazier, who is on the scene nowadays, definitely making sure that networking and professional ties and bonds are formed as it relates to business and economic empowerment in our community. We're going to spend a little bit of time highlighting some wonderful work that's being done in Philadelphia by a good brother, good friend of mine, Norm Bond. One day, God willing, I'll be able to get him on the show. And we're also going to highlight some of the achievements of some notables in Black history, since this is Black History Month. We're going to touch on Madam C.J. Walker. We're going to touch on some of the accomplishments of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We're definitely going to work into the conversation some of the insight that's being put out there nowadays by Dr. Claude Anderson. And you know, the time and what must be done dictates that we have to take any opportunity we can to echo and highlight the words and the wisdom of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan as he prepares to deliver a message next week that's actually entitled Muhammad's Economic Blueprint, Ending Poverty and Want. How could you ask for a better lineup? The No Romance Without Finance show, as you know, is certainly not solely focused on relationships. Sorry to mislead you. It's not about the feel-good stuff. It's not about getting your groove on with the man or woman of your dreams. We get down to business, and we put the focus and the emphasis on making sure that individually and personally we're doing well in our finances and in our economic health assessment, so that we can be as beneficial as possible to our families, to our community, to our nation at large. So we're putting the topic and the conversation about business, about economics, about finance on Front Street, and we're hoping that it can generate some more conversation and some more dialogue. I want to make sure that every episode that we do leaves you with something, leaves you with a plan of action, first and foremost, but gives you a greater understanding of where you are with your finances, your economic outlook, and how to guide and maneuver yourself so that at the end of this year, the end of 2013, we can all be in a much better position than we are when we started. So I thank you for joining me. I appreciate that so much. And we're going to get into the conversation in just a little bit. If you want to join in the conversation, feel free to mention it in the chat room or actually call in to the show. The number is 646-716-5971. We get a lot of people who listen in on the archive, so I try to make sure that we drop a lot of good information. And even if no one else joins the conversation, I'm going to be on here flowing for the people who are going to be listening later on. If they can't catch it live, they will check the archive. So to begin the conversation, what I want to do is put the focus right where I love to have it. Over the last few months, I've been making sure that the theme is consistent and that we know that the need to develop a community of our own is really in accord with the time and what must be done. We look at what's going on in America, and we're getting a beautiful analysis and a picture painted for us by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in his lecture series, The Time and What Must Be Done, really seeing that, to put it bluntly, America is in bad shape. The unemployment rate keeps on rising, and even if they do get a little reprieve and you hear a day where, oh, unemployment fell by half of a point, it doesn't seem to last very long, and even if new jobs are created, I don't know about you in your community, but in my community, I don't see much of a change going on. And statistics still show that no matter what the overall improvement or adjustment is, for black people in America, for poor people in America, it continues to slide, and there continues to be an ever-widening gap in how much difference there is in the earning of the haves and the have-nots, and the number of people who have health insurance. I know that when the whole debate over universal health care was on the table, they kept highlighting that there are over 41, 42 million people in America who don't have health insurance, more likely than not because they can't afford to pay for health insurance. So that number is continuously growing. We know that economics and education seem to go hand in hand, and we know that the school systems are failing our children. You can look at just about any state, almost any city in America, and you can see the evidence that the school systems are failing, which is producing a certain set of circumstances which we know put the whole community in a bad light. Violence increases, broken homes increase, more unemployment, more poverty. So it's an ending cycle, and we see where all the ingredients are. So one of the solutions that has been offered for a very long time by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but also by other people in our community, and something that is really becoming very clear and very apparent nowadays, is that if the situation is to improve, if we are to put ourselves in a better position, in a better condition, we have to take responsibility and do it for ourselves. And that can't happen when we're isolated. That can't happen when everybody's go for self. I'm going to make my million and, you know, move to an island on my own. We can't get strong like that. We can't improve our conditions without one another. And before too long, circumstances and the conditions are going to show us, whether we want to see it or not, that we are going to need one another. You and I need to look at becoming a community, focusing on a common unity that benefits all of us. The idea of a win-win situation is going to have to become a part of our culture and a part of the way that we live into the future. Otherwise, we're really not going to have much of a future to speak of. So we'll get into that a little bit later again. If you want to join in on this discussion, because there will be plenty of people who are listening to us in the archives after this, feel free to join in. The number is 646-716-5971. I was recently having a conversation. This is an ongoing conversation, but it's one that we featured on the show several times before, about the need for like-minded people to actually do more than just live in the same state, do more than just know that we're in the same town, but actually look at becoming neighbors to one another, actually look at creating a community of our own. I echo this. I say this every time that I'm on the air, on this show, just because you happen to know that someone lives in your town, just because you happen to go to the same church or mosque, just because you all happen to be of the same faith, and you know that that person has children, they know that you have children, doesn't necessarily mean you are a community. If something goes down, if you're in need and you're in the north part of Pennsylvania and they're in the southern part of Pennsylvania, or your good friend is in Texas and you're in Georgia, that's not going to do you much good when you're in a time of need or when that person's in a time of need. But to honestly think about a community, one of the key ingredients is being together in close proximity so that you can actually say, hey, we have our needs and our wants and what benefits us in common. If I want streetlights added to my block, then that's something that benefits you as well as me. It makes our neighborhood and our community a safer place to be. Me getting in on my block and you living, you know, way across where you live, that doesn't help you. But as a community, if we are together, if we are closer in proximity to one another, then we actually make decisions and choices that benefit more than just ourselves and our own interests, but they actually start to benefit larger and larger environments and larger populations. So that should be a goal. Hopefully that seed that I just threw out there will take root in somebody else's mind. Because slowly but surely, more and more people are starting to find out that that makes sense, and we need to look at how we can relocate and be closer to one another, relocate and be of benefit to one another. So take that for what it's worth. I see we have one caller on the line already. I'm going to bring in the caller from area code 314 in just a second. Caller from 314, your microphone is open. Introduce yourself.
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam. Who's this?
Yes, sir, Brother Vernon. How you doing?
I'm feeling good. And yourself?
I'm fine. All praises due to Allah, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, to whom praises indeed due forever.
Say it loud and say it proud. Who am I speaking with, brother?
You're speaking with Brother Kareem Muhammad, sir.
Brother Kareem. Oh, brother. So good to have you on with me. How you feel?
I'm saying all praise is due to Allah, brother. You know, I'm still out here in the fight, in the struggle, and just glad to have a community that I can operate inside of.
That's awesome, brother. That's awesome. Are you ready for the big celebration? You know we got a big celebration coming up, right?
Yes, sir. You said big celebration. That's the only celebration I know.
That's right. That's right. You know, people, as I was walking around in the month of December, people were coming up to me and saying Merry Christmas and all that. And, you know, you never disrespect anybody, you know, I say God bless you right back.
Yes, sir.
Peace and blessings, you know, whatever the case may be. But it feels so good here in Black History Month. We got the crowning event of Black History Month, and it makes does my heart proud to have people tell me Happy Valentine's Day or whatever it is they wish me. I respond right back, Happy Savior's Day.
Yes, sir.
That's a really good feeling. We really have something to feel good about and something to celebrate. So, my brother, tell me. We're ticking off the conversation now. We're going to get into some more things in the next half an hour and whatnot. But I'm just kicking it around a little bit, talking about community development, a community of our own. And also, I want to get into this in the last 15 minutes of this this first segment, talking about creating our own economy. Imagine if you didn't have, you know, the dollar, if the dollar wasn't, you know, so much of what we depend on to get done what we need to have done. Can you think of any ideas or any ways in your life where you currently are using an alternative economic system to get what you need or to compensate somebody for what it is they need?
Yes, sir, absolutely, brother. I'm glad that you mentioned that. And one of the ways that I'm using at this particular point in time in my life and in my operations is it's a term that I'm sure hopefully others have heard about, and if they haven't, called cooperative economics.
Oh, I love that term.
Yes, sir. And what cooperative economics equates to or actually adds up to is this. Is back in the day, you may have known it, people would have known it maybe as the barter system. And the thing is for example, I have skills, several different levels of skills, but I have skills in construction. Well, say there's a brother or sister and they have a home or a business, you know, a building, whatever that needs work done on it. However, they don't have the dollars, if you will, to be able to pay me what that type of work would cost. Well, number one, understanding that this is the fall of America and the fall of the dollar, which individuals can study more on the fall of the dollar in the book, The Fall of America, by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But the thing is that the dollars that we are actually working with, as Minister Farrakhan has said, in he's described and talked about in his lecture series, The Time and What Must Be Done, it's a fiat, meaning it's fake, it's counterfeit. It really has no value. The only value that the dollar has is the value we give it. The only thing that's supporting or holding up this economic system is the fact that the people put faith in it. The money itself has no value. So, honestly, any individual that's tied to the dollar is truly a slave. Because other than, like I said, just the faith that a person puts in it, the idea that this has value is the only thing there. What we can do or what we do is I offer my services to this individual and they offer their services to me. As I was saying, say it's an individual, say with a house. Let's say it's a sister and she's got a house. Say she is a CPA or a tax auditor. All right, I need my taxes done. And as having a business, that normally will cost me anywhere from $150 to $300.
Mm-hmm.
Well, say that she has some work that needs to be done on her house. Well, we work it out, whereas she will get her material, I'll perform the work, she does my taxes for me so that I can turn that in. That's just one alternative. Another situation is where the Honorable Elijah Muhammad tells us, and I want to share that, because it falls right in line with it. And always I have to refer to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. In the book, Message to the Black Man, which I noticed you mentioned earlier, you were talking about, as the minister said, he's going to expound on the economic blueprint. It says here on page 174, acknowledge and recognize that you are a member of the Creator's nation and act accordingly. This action in the name of Allah requires you as a Muslim to set an example for the lost found, your brothers in the wilderness in North America. This requires action and deeds not words and lip service. The following blueprint shows the way. 1, recognize the necessity for unity and group operation activities. Just what you just said. 2, pool your resources, physically as well as financially. Stop one-time criticism of everything that is black-owned and black-operated. 4, keep in mind jealousy destroys from within. 5, observe the operations of the white man. He is successful. He makes no excuses for his failures. He works hard in a collective manner. You do the same. And just, again, what you were just talking about, like I said, that's part of working in a collective manner. Now, one of the things that people have to understand about cooperative economics is that we are yet in a society where we've got to use money. This is a reality.
Mm-hmm.
So that being the case, that means that you can't always expect individuals to come in and do work on the quote-unquote barter system where they're not getting paid at all. But
right.
What we do is we work out a methodology. We come to an agreement on a financial compensation that's not going to hurt anybody in the cooperative. In other words, for example, if we're in this cooperative together, we're pooling our resources. And the majority of the time, people think that resources, they automatically think money. Well, I looked the word up, went into the philology of it, the root of it, and resources literally means to rise again. So a resource is not money per se, but a resource is something that I can go to continuously and never deplete, and it will constantly always help me to continue to rise, to continue to reach my goals. The greatest
That's
resource
a whole new way
have,
to understand what a resource is, really.
Yes, sir. So our greatest resource, number one, our source is Almighty God. But our greatest resource is one another. We are the resource, operating in a collective manner. And so that means, I'm saying, for instance, like the messenger talks about 7 or 8 of us coming together, and he mentions a grocery store. That's interesting, as the particular business he uses as the example. But now here's the thing. Everyone in that cooperative has to understand that no one in the cooperative or in that co-op, you know, shorthand, should ever be in want or in need, and that need not be met by the cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, that way, because when my mind is clear of the burden of providing food, clothing, and shelter for myself, I'm now at peace and I'm able to think higher. I'm able to operate and move better to make sure that that cooperative continues to exist. But now we have to take it outside of just that small group. And as you were talking about, expand it into the community. We have to go to the community, like the messenger just said, and be an example. Show them how they can begin to operate and achieve their goals and reach their needs without any money or very little money.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know what? When you read that, when you read that list that came out of the economic blueprint, it reminds me of, first of all, you get to my favorite part, the part about making no excuses for failure, you know,
yes,
working
sir.
Hard in a collective manner. I like that part about making no excuses for failure. Every day, and what I try to do every week on the No Romance Without Finance show is make sure that there's a plan of action. And when you talk about this pool your resources or coming together, that's a question that we should ask ourselves every week. You know, just like we ask ourselves, just like we talk about this particular subject, that we can say, we need to pool our resources. We need to come together. We can say that. But what if we held ourselves accountable and every week or every day we ask ourselves, what did I do today that equates to pooling resources with my brother or with my sister? What did I do today that equates to working in a collective manner? Who did I work with? Who did I partner with? And what did we do to benefit the both of us? What can I say I did that constituted me joining in with the greater community, the greater, you know, good, not just going for self, but how can I put something in with someone else that we are using to put us both or put us all in a better position. You know, that's the type of thing, that's the type of question that at the end of every day we should look in the mirror and not go to bed until we can answer. And then we get ourselves used to living that and making that a part of our culture. My mind keeps going to what Sister Ava said today. She said, look, we have to practice what we say we believe. Not just talk about it, not just profess it, but we got to get to the point where we're practicing that, because that is really what's going to save us. And when you talk about actually doing that, my mind immediately went to the fact that if we are actually providing for everybody's needs, if we're making sure everybody's needs are covered, it's nothing for me to make sure that, okay, you know, if I put enough gas in my gas tank, you know, I'm certainly not spending down to my last dime. What if throughout the course of a day, at least once during the course of the day, I find another one of my brothers or another one of my sisters, and I make sure that I give them $10 to put in their gas tank? Everybody got to go somewhere. Everybody need gas. What if that became the norm? What if that became the culture? Every time you saw a brother or sister, either you were offering them some money to put in their gas tank or they were offering you some money to put in your gas tank. Imagine that. That means that on any given day, you may have 5, 10, 15 people coming up giving you something to put in your gas tank. That can be done with gas for your vehicle. That can be done with food. That can be done with, hey, here's $10 to put on your light bill. Whatever the case may be. Everybody's needs are covered, but that's the importance of having a community, and that's what it means to pool your resources, work hard in a collective manner, and make no excuses. Nobody goes without, and everybody is covered. I love that. Thank you for reading that, brother. That's right on point.
Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah.
Yes, sir. That's what we need more of. But I tell you what, brother, we are at the almost at the top of the hour. We got a couple more minutes. I know that you're going to have some good stuff to add to the conversation. I want to take a break, which is what I normally do, right at 8 o'clock. Come on back, and then we'll hear a message from our sponsor, and then we can go on ahead and get into this Black History Month celebration. I want to highlight some wonderful people. We're looking at Reginald F. Lewis, Madam C.J. Walker, George Frazier, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We got some greats in our legacy. So even though, you know, I haven't been watching much TV this month, but, you know, The tradition has been the same old people have put before us because it's Black History Month. Well, we have an even greater legacy to put before ourselves than what somebody else shows us about ourselves. So we're going to have a wonderful show this evening. Stay and hold on the line, and we are going to go to a break real quick, and I'll pick you back up on the other side, all right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, my brother. You are tuned into the No Romance Without Finance show. I'm your host, Vernon Muhammad, and we'll be right back after this break. Back to the No Romance Without Finance show. I'm your host, Vernon Muhammad. I am glad to be back, and I'm glad to introduce to some of you and present to others one of our sponsors. I'm talking about none other than Freedom Paper Company, LLC. If you didn't know, or if you don't know, there's a black manufacturer and distributor of something that every one of us uses, spends money on, and will continue to spend money on for the rest of our lives almost. That is bathroom tissue. Freedom Paper Company produces a quality product and an economically valuable product that is comparable to much of the brands that you are already familiar with. They also produce a whole line of other personal paper products, such as paper towels that you use in your kitchen and throughout your home, liquid antibacterial and lotion soaps, facial tissue, and actually a host of other personal paper products and janitorial cleaning supplies. So when you go and do your grocery shopping, when you think about grabbing bathroom tissue, when you think about grabbing paper towels, when you think about stocking up the supply closet for your church, your mosque, your school, or whatever it is, support black, buy black, celebrate Black History Month. Let's start practicing what we say we believe and buy Freedom paper products, Freedom bathroom tissue, Freedom paper towels, Freedom trash bags, Freedom facial tissue, and a host of other products. Go to www.freedompapercompany.com. This is owned by your brothers and your sisters in the nation. So let us pool our resources, work collectively, and make no excuses for failure. So, my brother, I'm on the line with Brother Kareem Muhammad out of St. Louis. Is that right, Brother Kareem?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. So what's the scene looking like there? How is how are the preparations going, and how is everybody looking in terms of heading towards Chicago?
Well, brother, I mean, the scene here is, I mean, it's just, as usual, during this time of year for Savior's Day, I mean, and as you mentioned, wow, that's it, Savior's Day, a Savior born for us. The spirits are high. Everybody's looking forward to traveling to Chicago to be there with the man of God and hear what he has to say. You know, that's the only thing I can really say. The spirit's always high when it comes time to go to Savior's Day. The thing for me is that I think about is once we come back, just what we were talking about before you went to the break, is when you bring that back, putting it into action, you know, not just being like going to the concert and I don't have to a concert juice. I don't even know who's out there. But I'm gonna, from back in my day, I'm going to say Bootsy, okay?
You know, you didn't take it all the way back. Dang, brother, you could have tried to play it off.
But, you know, you go to the concert and you're all hyped and ready to roll.
Yes, sir.
But then the next day, it's just a, you know, it's a fleeting memory.
Right, back to work.
You know, right, back to work. And my thing is that we're going to Savior's Day. It's not entertainment. We're going there to receive instructions, and then we have to incorporate those instructions into our daily activities. And when we come back, it can't just be about, well, that was wonderful. He gave a great lecture, and like you say, now it's back to work as usual. And we produce nothing, you know. It's just, so, yeah, the spirits are high, and I just pray to Allah that they remain that way. I pray that a majority, you know, bring back that spirit and actually build on it.
That's what I'm talking about. That is that's my hope and prayer too, brother. I mean, we can't approach a subject like this, you know, knowing that the title is Muhammad's Economic Blueprint, knowing that it actually is Muhammad's Economic Blueprint, Ending Poverty and Want, and
yes,
knowing
sir.
that, you know, there's a major push now, major push and focus on the fact that we need to, number one, start producing our own needs for ourselves, because whoever we're depending that in order to do that, in order to fulfill on that, we got to all come together collectively so that we can purchase enough land that we can then begin to utilize to create jobs for ourselves, create businesses for ourselves, and begin to have business spread all throughout America, wherever our people may be. That's something that I hope and pray that after Savior's Day is over, everybody comes back with a renewed spirit, a renewed mindset to really take that from being words on a page or cliches that we say, and we actually start living that on a daily. We can see how we're actually putting it into practice. So the same sentiment is going on here on the East Coast, brother. That's the topic of conversation no matter where you go. And I hope that our listeners who listen to this show in the archives, if you're not able to travel to Chicago next week, please make sure that you tune in to NOI.org. Next Sunday, I believe, I'm not really sure what the time is going to be. It's going to be sometime in the afternoon, probably 1, 2 o'clock or something like that. I'm not looking at the page right now. But go to NOI.org, which is the official page of the Nation of Islam, and there will be a webcast. So if you can't travel there, you will definitely have an opportunity to tune in live, share with your friends, share with your family, make it a wonderful event. It's much better than watching the NBA playoffs and the wiggly whack dunk contest that took place and all of that stuff that goes on the norm. But let's do this. I want to get into some of the comments that are being made in the chat room. I also want to get to highlighting some of the people that we want to celebrate and want to make sure that we're introducing to the listeners for Black History Month. There's Sister Keisha out of Atlanta. As we were having our conversation, Brother Kareem, she talked about making the farming project work. You know, there's a very big necessity, and really, I think this can work no matter where you know you are in the country. We may have a farm that's down south or a farm that's in Georgia, but we here in Maryland or in St. Louis or wherever we are, we can start being the agents of that farming effort, that farming project, and set up ties and set up distribution channels so that if we go to our local grocers, if we go to stores or market centers in and around our own towns, we can create a customer base and say, hey, I have distribution. I have product that's going to be coming up from the South. Quality product may come up and be more economical than what you're already currently offering on your shelves. So that'll be a great way and a great help to the farming effort that's already taking place in the South as different distribution lines open up. I thought that was a pretty good idea. And it also, because all of us will be working collectively throughout the nation, then it definitely gives us an advantage and gives us a way that we can compete with the bigger entities that we are so dependent on. If we all turn our attention to that resource that is producing for us in the South, then we can amplify its reach and make sure that what it has to put out can actually go far and wide and then come right back and benefit all of us together. So that's a good idea, Sister Keisha. I definitely appreciate your input on that. And now what we want to do is get into an article I read. I'm going to start off, we got a lot of people we want to highlight. I'm going to start off with George Frazier. I'm impressed with Mr. George Frazier. I really like this brother. I've seen him several times a few years ago when I was first introduced to him on Tavis Smiley's State of the Black Union addresses. He was one of the first people I heard when the black spending power, or the money in the black economy got to about $750 billion, and didn't take much time from that time until now we're up over $1.1 trillion. But at that time, he was the first person that I heard put such a focus and such an emphasis on professional and business networking, black people getting together for the purpose of doing business with one another, finding out who has the resources, who has things of value to offer, and making sure that we know one another and act in accord with what we know. So when I went to his website, Fraser.net, F-R-A-S-E-R-N-E-T, FraserNet, actually it's FraserNet, pardon me, FraserNet.com, F-R-A-S-E-R-N-E-T.com. You go to his website, he has loads of good resources and articles and whatnot on there. And I was reading one, 9 Biggest Mistakes When Networking. Many of us, you know, we really don't know what networking is. We think that networking is just go, you know, introduce yourself. It's much more than that, much more than that. And this this particular article that I'm reading gives the 9 biggest mistakes. And I'm going to read them to you right here. It says, what can you do for me? That's number one. The main goal of all effective networking is discovering what you can do for someone else. Great networkers want to know what they can do for you, not what you can do for them. If you understand this, the rest is just mechanics. So go in not necessarily just for the purpose of looking what you can get out of it or just looking to introduce yourself so that, you know, hoping you can get new business out of it, you can get new clients and customers. Every conversation that you have just automatically starts out. Here's my business card. Here's what I can do for you. I'm trying to tell you something right now. That is not networking. That's not a good way to start out. Start with listening. Good networking starts with listening first and foremost, so that you can find out what other people need. Then you know what you can do for them, and when you can speak to their needs, then they'll begin to speak to your needs, and they'll let you know what they can do for you. So don't go into it with the what can you do for me mentality. Number two on the list, 9 biggest mistakes of networking. We don't get out. Getting out and networking networking is an analog contact sport. You don't do it alone from your office, your phone, or your computer. Force yourself to go to trade shows, conventions, seminars, get out there, meet people, and press the flesh. I think that's a key one right there, because in today's world, in today's society, we get so dependent on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, all these different social media outlets. Those are good. Those are wonderful, especially if you're working them the way that they're supposed to be worked. You actually getting new friends and actually communicating with the new friends and new contacts that you're making. It's not just about adding friends to your list. But if you actually communicate with people, you know, and that leads to more face-to-face meetings, then something good is actually happening. Something good is coming up out of that. But you got to get from behind the screen. It's not about trying to be, you know, the minister of Facebook, be an armchair quarterback, you know. Like our leader and teacher says, the work is in the street. So it's good to coordinate. It's good to, you know, introduce yourself and get introduced to new ideas that you can find on the internet you wouldn't have been able to find if you just stayed local in your own town. But once you get educated, once you get a little bit more from meeting and interacting with people online, get yourself out there. Get to the live event. You may have to travel. You know, you may be coming from the East Coast or from the West Coast and going to Savior's Day in Chicago. But think of all the wonderful people that you'll meet there in Chicago. And after that's over, there'll be other trade shows, there'll be other events and things that happen in and around your own town, your own state. So get out, meet some people, and let people know that you're real and what you have to offer can affect them in the real world, not just through the screen. Another thing says, you won't shut up. Huh? Ask good questions and then shut up. Listen, the mark of a good conversationalist is not that you talk a lot, is that you can get others to talk a lot. Ask questions like, what do you do? Where are you from? What brings you to this event? Then listen. Ironically, you'll be remembered as an interesting person. That's a trip. Think about that. If you listen more, people will think you're an interesting person. How'd that work, Brother Kareem?
Because you're showing interest.
Right. But that's interesting. You know, I found that to be the truth, though. You know, people who if you talk to people and they say that I'm a good friend or they speak highly of me, most of it is because I spend my time listening to them. I spend my time in conversations or in interactions with them, you know, letting them get it out, letting them say what it is they want to say or share their perspective. And that does go a long way. And somehow I haven't quite figured out how it works yet, but people remember you for that. So that's a good one for everybody to remember. Talk less, listen more. I just happen to be talking a lot because I'm on a radio show and we can't sit here and talk. Number four is you're boring. Unveil your passions. Talking only about business is boring. Your passions make you interesting. Good networkers unveil their passions after they get to know you. Great networkers lead with their passions. If you meet me, my passions are golf, reading, biographies, and jazz. That's what the writer of this particular article is. And that's key. That's critical. You know, a lot of you ever heard that business deals are done on the golf course? People don't necessarily, you know, always think about meetings and conference calls. And you go out to these events. You go out to network. You go to social events. You hit social media, and you be social. After you get to know people and you get comfortable with them and they get comfortable with you, doing business or opportunities to do business come much easier. So that's another good pointer. You're informed. Be informed. Read voraciously, not just business publications. You need a broad base of knowledge so that you'll have access to a vast array of information during conversation. Even if you're a pathetic, passionless person, at least be a well-read one who can talk about a variety of topics beyond the weather and sports. That's key. That's critical. You know, current events, somewhere along the line I read that, you know, just part of being a man, I don't know how this would equate for sisters, but part of being a man is being able to speak intelligently on current affairs, current events. You know, what's going on in the news today? There's a reason why, you know, men wake up and, you know, we're supposed to read the newspaper. You're supposed to know what's going on around you. And then you're supposed to at least be able to have semi-conscious or, you know, semi-intelligent conversations about what's going on in the day-to-day world. You know, politics may or may not be your thing, but at least have a little bit of knowledge on what's going on with President Obama. You may or may not be in business, a business owner per se, but you find a little bit about what's going on in Congress. You know, what changes are being made? Are there any new benefits that are coming up for small business owners? Where the opportunities lie? You know, what is the legislation that is being passed? What's going on in 2014? You know, little snippets of, like that you pick up on being open to having conversation, general conversation with people. You never know what opportunity is by. Six.
Yes, sir.
Am I still on with you, or?
I don't know what happened. Okay, what happened?
And I'm back. I don't know what happened there, but I just lost my signal. My phone just dropped, so I'm back. I'm glad that I was able to get in. I must have been giving y'all some really good information because it cut me off when I got into my flow. But I was on number six, and it was talking about following up. He says, I've given away thousands of business cards. If all those people called or emailed me, I'd never get anything done. The funny thing is hardly anyone ever follows up. Great networkers follow up within 24 hours. A short email will do. Nice to meet you. I hope we can do something together sometime. Thank you for recommending Confessions of an Economic Hitman. I'm a member of Canterbury Golf Club. Let's hit the ball together before the end of the season on my dime. Follow-up within 24 hours. That's a key component of a great networker, and it gives wonderful results down the line. So many missed opportunities come from lack of follow-up. This is good for me, too. The next one, number 7, no business cards. Please carry business cards, especially if you are in business or if you're a professional. Make it easy for me to contact you. Don't give me your information on a piece of toilet paper. Make sure your card has a phone number, email address, and address. Please have it in 12-point type if you want old, famous, rich, and powerful people to call or email you. That goes without saying. But never be caught without being able to leave your calling card. If you're going to make a lasting impression, if you're going to want people to remember you, then after the conversation is over, you want to leave them with something so that they can easily reach out to you again. So that's, you know, that almost goes without saying. He has it as step number 7, but you know, that should have been one of the basic things that people remember. When you're networking, make sure that you leave people with something where they can easily get back in touch with. Number 8 is take first. Those that give first, give favors win. One of my greatest pleasures in life is helping other people. Now, by taking first, he's saying that's one of the mistakes that we make. We always try to get something out of the deal before we get it. One of my greatest pleasures in life is helping other people. I believe there's a big spiritual scorecard in the sky. Well, take that for what it's worth, but scorecard. God is keeping track of the good that you do. And is particularly pleased when you give favors without expectation of return from the recipient. The scoreboard always pays back. And that's actually a principle in the Quran. I think it's in the Bible too. You know, when you give charity, don't do it trying to get something for yourself. Give because you want to do something good for somebody else. Blessings come for you automatically as a result of that. But don't give trying to make a name for yourself or be seen, and don't give and then follow it up by doing something that kind of negates what you've just done. And certainly don't go into the situation just trying to get something out of it before you put something in. And the 9th biggest mistake that networkers make is having no agenda. It says, have an agenda. In other words, why are you there? What do you really need? It's okay to ask for favors in return. Good networkers give favors and return favors, but great networkers ask for favors to be returned. But they never ask before they know the person, and they never ask for something that the other person can't deliver. Finally, they never do for the other to keep them indebted to them. Life is give and take. So is effective networking. So don't do things to people so you can hold it over their head or leave strings attached. But that's business. You know, it's an ebb and flow. You give, and then something comes back to you automatically. You don't have to try to game the system. You don't have to pull a fast one over on people. But you definitely want to know what you're doing, what you're about, and who you're dealing with so that you know what to expect coming from them. So that's valuable nugget that I found on George Frazier's website. It's frazernet.com. He's one of the great people in our community as it relates to business development, and things of that nature. Another one that I want to highlight for us while we're celebrating Black History Month is Reginald F. Lewis. Reginald F. Lewis is one of the most significant businessmen in the 21st century, one of the most significant Black businessmen in the 21st century because of what he was able to achieve. He came from humble beginnings in Baltimore, Maryland, where he was born on December 7th in 1942. He became one of the most successful business leaders in the 1980s. And he was the richest African-American man in the 1980s. So he really made some significant achievement in his time. He was a member of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity, and in 1992, Forbes listed 400 richest Americans with a net worth estimated at $400 million. In the 1980s or the 1990s, that was considered a lot. Now we have, you know, I think he was the first black billionaire, but Bob Johnson, you know, when he was the owner of BET, he came to such prominence and such recognition because he was a black media owner and he was a billionaire. When Oprah crossed the line and hit the billionaire status, it was definitely highlighted that she was at least the first black female, black woman billionaire. And I know that there are other black billionaires, but he accomplished this, what he accomplished back in the early 90s. And that's a major, major significance to be listed on Forbes, a listing of top 400 richest Americans. And he was also the first African American to build a billion-dollar company, Beatrice Foods, TLC Beatrice Foods. It was a worldwide international distributor of food and food products. So, you know, he was responsible for shipping food to hospitals, to convention centers, to, you know, big places like that, to the school system and whatnot. And even beyond that, he did it beyond just this country, but he was doing it in other parts of the world. And it was a black man who was at the head of all of that. So that was a major accomplishment. And if you didn't know Reginald Lewis before today, when you think of black history, definitely think of Reginald F. Lewis. And he wrote a book called Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? It's his autobiography that talks about his life and his struggles and all the lessons that he's learned on his way to becoming the top in his chosen industry. So that's a definite great resource to look for and have in our arsenal. As I came back, I saw that a couple of other lines dropped off. I don't know why, but Brother Kareem, you're out there still?
Yes, sir.
All right. Glad to have you back. Got another caller who looks like wants to join in, but they're from an anonymous number. You must be on Skype or something like that. Who's that out there? Introduce yourself. I think the person's calling on Skype. If you're across the Skype or your number's blocked out, I can't really see who you are. Your microphone is open, though. All right, maybe this joins later.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Oh, okay.
Who's this?
Yeah, my name's Joe.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for calling into the No Romance Without Finance show. How you doing?
Okay. I was waiting for you to get to the No Romance Without Finance, but you started talking about making contacts. So, which is good. So, I just wanted to say that I think that Mr. Fraser is about 80% there. I don't think he's got it completely, though.
Yeah, everybody has something to contribute. You know, he's definitely not the ultimate. There are so many other people that we have to highlight and share. He's just one person that I think is doing some good things, though.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, if he's a billionaire, he knows what he's doing. It's just about the networking. Because as you were talking, I'm looking at his site right now.
Okay.
And because I missed out on the first three principles, and I wanted to find out what they were, and I didn't know if I was going to get through, so I thought, yeah, I'm going to do my own research on this now. So I got this, and what I'm saying about what he's missing out on is that if you're going to network, to do business, if you're going to network just to be social, then I agree with him. But if you're going to do business, the major thing you have to do is you have to have something that's going to benefit the other person. So if you're going to give out business cards, that's good. But if they call you and you start talking and you know everything about current events and you're up to date, and he graduated from a decent college, and he's graduated or she's graduated from a decent college. That's fine, but neither one of you are going to get anywhere, and you're just going to, you know, remain nice business friends, and you see each other once in a while. But if you really want to get the best effect out of networking, you have to find out what it is, the problems of this other person that you're talking to, and then offer solutions if you can. That's networking. Because if I'm going to network with someone, and I'm going to talk to a bunch of people, you know, throughout the year, and none of these people can help me, and I can't help them, you know, what's the good of it?
You're right.
You know?
Then you just have casual conversations.
Right, then you can go out on the golf course and have a good time, but you're not making money from one another. The purpose of networking is to make money from one another.
You know, and when I first heard of him and when I first heard him introduced, that's exactly the point that he was on. You know, he talked about how we are best when it comes to throwing that party for the Emmys and, you know, all the different things that have become a part of you know, black culture in America.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're big on the Super Bowl party, go to the NBA All-Star weekend, so that, you know, we're big on all of that. When it comes to networking to spend money. But he said now it's time for a shift. We've got to get into networking for the purposes of producing money, doing business. So I definitely agree with what you said. I think you're right on point there.
Yeah, and I think that's probably his major message, but I think maybe he's trying to give the message, you know, don't try to come across, you know, like gangbusters. But the thing is, number one, people aren't networking unless they just want, you know, more friends inside. And if they don't have a lot of people to hang out with, then it's good to network. But if they got enough people to hang out with, what they want and what you would want, let's say you got connected with a bunch of people, eventually what you would want out of people is, can you help me? Can I help you? You know? Because if you don't have that attitude, and if the other people don't have that attitude, then everybody's, you know, getting together for drinks, which is nice, but your business is going broke.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Hey, I thank you, and I appreciate your input. Welcome to the No for Romance Without Finance show, if this is your first time here.
Yep, it is. So take it easy.
All right, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, we appreciate that, caller. You see, I'm working the switchboard here and trying to make sure that the right mics are open. All right. So back to Mr. Reginald Lewis. We were talking about him and TLC Beatrice Foods, which, let's see. Oh, that's right. I got to the end of it. So he became the first African-American to build a billion-dollar company. Which he did back in the 80s. So, at the time of his death, as a matter of fact, let me see, according to the last line of what's here, when TLC Beatrice reported revenue of $1.8 billion in 1987, it became the first black-owned company to have more than $1 billion in annual sales. At its peak in 1996, TLC Beatrice International Holdings Incorporated had sales of $2.2 billion and was number 512 on Fortune magazine's list of 1,000 largest companies. So the brother was doing his thing, and he was doing it the right way, and we should definitely take a look at him and how he did what he did. Again, his book is Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun, written by Reginald F. Lewis. Check him out, learn something, and see if you can incorporate that into how you do what you do. Now I'm going to take a skip to the past because as I was reading about this particular woman, I was very much impressed by what she was able to accomplish. And I'm speaking of none other than Sarah Breedlove, a.k.a. Madam C.J. Walker. Yes, Madam C.J. Walker was born Sarah Breedlove to former slaves. Can you imagine that? I mean, coming out of slavery, your parents used to be slaves. Now they're just getting up, just making their way. And you got to carve out a survival for yourself in those circumstances. She was born in Delta, Louisiana in 1867. She became an orphan at age 7 when her parents died. 3 years later, 10-year-old Sarah and her sister moved across the river to Vicksburg, Mississippi, to work as maids when she was 10 years old. By her 14th birthday, she married Moses McWilliams of Vicksburg, and 3 years later gave birth to her own daughter, her only daughter, Lila. Later on, her daughter changed her name to Alila. Breedlove became a widow in 1887, and she and her daughter moved to St. Louis to join her older brothers and her older brothers who were barbers in St. Louis. So she's up in your town, Brother Kareem.
Yes, sir.
Laying the groundwork for you to come on and make some more greatness happen.
That's what we got to do.
When she went, while in St. Louis, it says she worked as a washerwoman, earning $1.50 a day. I don't know how much that equates to in like 2013 dollars, but $1.50 a day don't sound like much at all, no matter what time it is. It says she married her second husband, John Davis, in 1894, and that marriage lasted for 9 years. Fast forward on to 1905, when she moved to Denver. Says she sold hair care products in St. Louis for St. Louis businesswoman Annie Polk Turnbull. So she was living in Denver, but there was a businesswoman in St. Louis that was producing hair care products. It was in Denver that she married her third husband, a newspaper sales agent, Charles Joseph Walker. I always wondered where the C.J. Walker came in. But Charles Joseph Walker was her husband. She decided in Denver to found a business to manufacture and market her own hair treatment formula, which she called Wonderful Hair Grower. She adopted a new professional name, Madam C.J. Walker. Who knew? Which she retained after her divorce from Charles Walker in 1912. She began to offer her products for sale through door-to-door agents called Madam C.J. Walker Hair Culturists. So if you thought that Avon started the whole knocking on the door, here we're selling stuff, it didn't start with Avon. Madam C.J. Walker was in that industry back in 1912. Walker also set up a training school for her sales personnel. So she didn't just get the stuff and say, go sell this. There's a method, there's a science to business. As the business expanded, Walker relocated her operations to Indianapolis. Then, which was then the third largest inland shipping hub in the nation, to establish a factory for her line of beauty products. She created a chain of beauty parlors in major cities in America, South America, and the Caribbean. Madam C.J. Walker also set up a training school for beauticians in Pittsburgh and began to advertise and sell products by mail order. She was doing it. Man. By 1915, Madam C.J. Walker was by far the wealthiest African-American woman in the nation. Born in 1867 to parents who were slaves or former slaves, and by 1915, what's that, 47 years later? Yep.
48 years.
She became the wealthiest African-American woman in the nation. She was invited to major gatherings of black leaders and shared the platform with notables such as Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois. Her personal triumph inspired other women, and she was often invited to lecture on business and politics. Check this part out. In World War I, the federal government enlisted her to persuade African Americans to support the war effort and to buy war bonds, even as it placed her on a list of Negro subversives because of her advocacy on behalf of black soldiers who faced racial discrimination. Ain't that some stuff?
Here you go. Corona,
they labeled her a Negro subversive because she advocated on behalf of black soldiers who faced racial discrimination, all while asking her to help persuade black people to join the army and buy war bonds. That's a doggone thing.
Him speak with forked tongue.
Say that again?
Him speak with forked tongue.
Him speak with forked tongues. I was going to say, you know, you can't be surprised.
more up to date. You know, we go with cameo. You're talking out the side of your neck.
Talking out the side of your neck. I like that. I like that. But that's real. That's how it goes. You know, the more things change, the more things stay the same. So understand who we are dealing with, because whether you want to call them they, or whether you want to say, you know, the white man or whoever it is, it seems like the modus operandi does not change. And as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, the government of America and the people who run America, the children of our former slave masters, do not intend to change, and their treatment and offer of friendship is nothing but smoke and mirrors and lies and falsehoods. So from 1915 to 2013, it's all the same. She was doing some very big and wonderful things, though. Madam C.J. Walker, born Sarah Bree Love in 1867, in 1915 became one of the wealthiest black women in the country. She was also called on to, Walker also spoke out on the social conditions affecting African Americans and devoted particular attention and money to the campaign to make lynching a federal crime. Interesting. The home, she lived lavishly in a country estate called Villa Loaro. She called, wait a minute, she named it Villa Loaro. Wonder what that means. Overlooking the Hudson River in Westchester County, New York. Her neighbors included Jay Gould and John D. Rockefeller. The home at Villa Loaro was designed by the black architect Bertner Woodson Tandy. So not only was she famous, and was she able to achieve a certain degree of success, but when she did achieve that success, the home and the estate that she lived in was designed by a black architect. This is back in the early 1900s, Bertner Woodson Tandy. Gotta look him up and see what he was all about back then. The home at Villa Loaro also served as a conference center for summits of black leaders.
Wow. Come on now.
Never knew. Look at that. Black history. They won't tell you this, you know, in school. They won't tell your children, so we got to educate and inform ourselves. This information was provided by blackpast.org, remembered and reclaimed. So you can find much more on other notable black figures in history by checking and doing the research yourself. Another one that I want to highlight, this is a good friend of mine, actually, a good brother who is on the scene today. We have some wonderful talent and skills in our community right up to the modern time. I'm speaking of none other than Mr. Norm Bond, who has been, over the past few years, has been getting a lot of recognition and is an expert at making sure he is in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing. I'm looking at pictures of him with Tom Joyner, pictures of him with Kathy Hughes. What is this, CNN? He's being interviewed, I think, on CNN. Just people being in the right place at the right time, putting in the work first and foremost. He is the director of the National Alliance of National Alliance of Marketing Developers. And he specializes in bringing business and doing business in the urban market, reaching the urban consumer. So whether it's black businesses who want to begin to incorporate the idea of cooperative economics and buy black more and more into our community, or whether we want to open the doors and bring the power and the leverage that black spending power has and utilize that when we're going to other merchants and other places to spend our dollars. He knows how to get that two-way flow going, and he spends a lot of time in different avenues and venues making business happen. This is a wonderful brother. I had an opportunity to be in his presence I think it was in November or early. It was early November, November 8th, as a matter of fact. We were up in Philadelphia at a wonderful event that they did, centered around the whole concept of buying black. He is doing these events to make that a regular part of our culture. It was already, you know, we're going into the holiday season, into the time when people were thinking about where they're going to be spending a whole lot of money. So for the past 11 years in Philadelphia, he's been hosting these events that just put the focus and the emphasis on buy black, buy black, buy black. He put some wonderful vendors and business owners from up and down the East Coast together. He had the gentleman who was the president or the head of the Philadelphia Black Chamber of Commerce and the owner of the, I think it was radio station WURD was there, and just a bunch of wonderful resources that are in our community that we don't even know about. Norm Bond seems to make it his business to be involved and be the bridge that connects all of the dots. You know, he's a master at networking. He does it like no other. He makes sure that the people with and the haves in our community get connected with those who need a hand up, need a leg up. So he's a wonderful brother. If you get a chance, go check out normbond.com, normbond.com. And as I said, I'm going to have him, hopefully, God willing, on the show in the next few weeks. You know, we'll be able to coordinate our schedules because I would love for him to talk about some of the things that he's working on. I learned about, I can't remember the sister's name, but the empowerment project, the sister who she and her husband for 1 year, they decided to do this project where they were going to buy black. They were only going to spend money with black people for a whole year. And they did it. They did it successfully and learned a lot about it. And then they used that to kind of springboard a whole campaign around the country of getting more and more black people to leverage our own spending dollars first and foremost within our own community, circulate those dollars, because without us making sure that whatever money we make stays in our community will continue to remain weak, and we won't be able to solve the problems that we're facing because we got no economic strength with which to do that. So I learned about her through Norm Bond, and Norm Bond always seems to be connected with people of that caliber. So another one to watch out for and look out for. We started our conversation tonight. As we're getting into the last 15 minutes of the show, we started our conversation talking about the Muhammad's Economic Blueprint. So here in Black History Month, on the No Romance Without Finance show, a week before Savior's Day, there is no possible way that we can end this show without talking about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. As yes, it relates to, you're right, you know, please act like you know. you can't think that you're going to, you know, do a review of Black history and not look at the significant strides of what was accomplished by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. At a time when millions of Black people were still in that flight from the South, there were loads of people who moved up from Mississippi, up from Alabama, up from Georgia and Tennessee to Chicago, to Detroit and whatnot in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, while the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was actively doing his work of laying out the blueprint, creating a future and a pathway that Black people can use to improve our conditions and make a way of life for ourselves. He was one of the few people who went back to the South and said the essence and the basis of us being able to make a way for ourselves in this country is by owning land, not just owning land, but making sure that we own producing land, going back to the earth, back to what we were running from the South, and actually getting back into farming and producing the basics of life. Talked about farming, producing our own food, but he also talked about getting the type of ground with which we can begin making our own bricks and building blocks, and then getting into real estate, building homes for ourselves and for our people, and then use that location and those locations as a basis of operation to produce our own needs, and then whatever excess we are able to produce after we've met our own needs, you'll have something to take throughout the world and sell and create an economy among black people. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the 70s, I think as late as 1974, 75, he had built an economic empire of over $82 million with certain industries being established, well established. Again, he was in the farming industry, the distribution industry. He had also opened up supermarkets. I think they were working on a bank if they didn't already have a bank.
Oh, we had a bank.
They had a bank. And
guaranteed
they were working
bank.
On a hospital. They were working
yes,
on a hospital. That's right. So the institutions that any society would need, you take any city in America and the things that you would expect to find in that city, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad pulled his followers all from all around the nation and said, look, we need to create a model of what this is we're talking about. So he had black people focused on building the types of institutions that it takes to sustain and run a society, schools, home, economics, anything you can think of and imagine. He made sure that that was what the Nation of Islam was about, just as a sign and just as an example of what could be accomplished if all of us throughout America actually began to think and operate that way. And it was just along the lines of the same list that you read earlier. I'll read it again, brother. It says, recognize the necessity for unity and group operation activities. Pool your resources physically as well as financially. Stop wanting criticism of everything that is black-owned and black-operated. Keep in mind, jealousy destroys from within. And lastly, observe the operations of the white man. He is successful. He makes no excuses for his failure. He works hard in a collective manner. You do the same. And, you know, I recall having a conversation with someone over Facebook. I think I posted that, just that, and got a response about, oh, that's racist. Oh, that's, why do you have to not include, you know, what about this and that? And you can take this just blueprint that he gave, and you can apply it to our Native American brothers and sisters. You can apply it to Latinos. You can apply it to other groups that come to America from Africa, from different parts of the world. It doesn't matter who you apply it to. This is just good common sense. Anybody who works, any group that has been able to work and become successful is worth studying and looking at, so you can find out, well, what did they do to become successful? And perhaps I can do that and become successful as well. When he wrote this, the people who controlled every facet of American society were white people. He said, observe the way they operate. They're successful, and they work hard in a collective manner. It only makes common sense that if that group of people got to be successful by doing that, then our group of people should do the same. Why shouldn't we work towards success for ourselves as a group? We should do the same. Stop criticizing ourselves and the things that come from us. There's no reason why we shouldn't stop wanting criticism of everything that's black-owned and operated. It's not racism or racist to try to improve relations within the black community. It's certainly not racist of us to say that, because we're working at improving relationships among all segments of our community and all segments in America. We're trying to improve relationships among black and Latino people, improve relationships, again, with our Native American brothers and sisters, as well as improve relationships within the black community. So it's kind of ridiculous for people outside of our community, first of all, to say that that's racist, because they don't, we're not even talking to them. But it is also ridiculous for our own people. You know, we're talking about doing something that brothers and sisters can can benefit from. Why would somebody black have a problem with that? Boggles my mind. I have conversations with people, and their first concern is, you know, do you do this in Europe? Are there any white people in the Nation of Islam? What the heck does that have to do with anything? That just, you know, I could, if we had time, I'd go into that.
Yes,
but that's the subject for another show. But Brother Kareem, we are wrapping it up. We're in our last 5 minutes, man. I appreciate you hanging in there with me. And is there anything you'd like to say? I mean, you got the audience. What do you want them to know about you and where you are in St. Louis?
Yes, sir. Well, bottom line is I appreciate you having me on, brother. And only thing I can say is I've enjoyed this greatly. And the facts that you shared, for example, about Madam C.J. Walker, so they only, when they talk about folks, they only want you to think about her as a hair care person, not someone who started what they call multi-level marketing today or door-to-door salesmanship, or someone who was active socially and politically. You know, what I can tell them about me is I'm just going to plug it. Right here in St. Louis, Missouri, you want to work together, you want to move in cooperative economics, contact me. 314-651-1094, that's Kareem's Construction, or 314-616-2060, I mean Holistic Health.
Wow.
So that we can practically get together and apply the principles that you hear about here on No More Romance Without Finance. I also want to say to anybody that's listening, they need to come back next week and bring somebody, have somebody listen with you so we can really get together and start cooperating.
Yes, indeed. You hit the nail on the head. As a matter of fact, next week is going to be, we're not doing the show next week because next week is the big day.
Yes, sir.
We don't work on Christmas Day, so.
Next week is actually
next week is actually our celebration in the Nation of Islam. We're celebrating the most wonderful time of the year. We call it Savior's Day. It's actually the anniversary of the birth of the founder of the Nation of Islam, Master Wallace Farad Muhammad, who's the founder of the Nation of Islam and who is the person who introduced the idea of black liberation theology into North America. So we celebrate his birth date, which was February 26th. The last Sunday in February is when we celebrate, and people from all over the country and many different parts of the world are actually going to be traveling to Chicago, and those who aren't traveling are going to be tuned into NOI.org, where they will get a live webcast. They will be able to view the live webcast of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and his message called Muhammad's Economic Blueprint,
yes, sir,
Ending Poverty and Want. So that's going to be a power-packed one. It is definitely in line with what the No Romance Without Finance show is all about. So I appreciate you tuning in now, and I certainly hope to hear and see you all there in Chicago, for those of you who are going, if you're not going, and we will make sure we connect other ways and tune in, catch us again after next week. We'll be back on the No Romance Without Finance show with more wonderful topics. And Brother Kareem, because you hung in there with me so long, I got a special song just for you.
Yes, sir.
Check this out. God bless everybody. Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings.
Wa alaikum salam.